Marguerite, you talked several times about your husband working in the shipyard during the war, and I never did ask you what shipyard he worked in.
It was down in Wilmington. But I don't remember. There was two, and one was across the street from the other. I really don't remember, but it was in Wilmington.
Do you remember him talking about women employees at the shipyard?
Yes, there were some, but I don't think there were too many at that time. And he was an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose there were women working, but I don't remember him saying too much about them.
Okay. I just thought as long as we were talking, I'd ask you because shipbuilding is one of the areas that we're going to cover.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you some more things about the plant and working during the war years before we go on. The post-war things, and I don't think I asked you about plant security, if you were aware of what the security was like at the plant.
Well, I think we had pretty good security. I know there were guards, and as you went in on the tunnel under the street. It was pretty hard to get in there if you didn't have the right information, had your ID. Or somebody took you in, you know, that was the high executive. You just didn't get in. And I think they had pretty good security there.
Were your things searched at all?
Coming out, yes. Well, if it looked suspicious, they'd go through, they had big tote bags, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If they thought there's something big enough to carry anything out, they searched you. I never was searched, but I've seen some that were.
What about inside the buildings themselves, in the bathrooms, and were there people checking up on what you did?
Oh, yeah, we had the lady guards there, And as we went in the plant, we always had to open our lunch boxes and show what was in there as we went in. And if you had a tote bag, you had to open that up. They just, it didn't look suspicious, but they just didn't pay any attention. No, there was when we first went to work there, the women weren't allowed to smoke. And they'd go to the restroom and smoke. It was before we had the 10-minute break of the morning. And the lady guards were in there. And she really got after you if you were smoking. Because I didn't smoke, so it didn't bother me any.
You know were disciplinary actions ever taken? Mm-hmm.
I don't recall any too much. I do remember this one girl came to work and she sprayed her hair green. And that was quite a thing at that time. But this was in the 1950s after the war. And of course we all had to make a trip down to the south end of the building to see what she looked like as we heard about it. And she was sent home to clean her hair up before she could come back. I remember that.
What about warnings against sabotage? I know that some women have talked about feeling real nervous that their mistakes would be interpreted as sabotage and that there were signs around warning against
that
kind of thing.
I'm
wondering if you're aware of that.
But I never felt that any mistakes I made were felt that way, but there was signs around all the time, and to be worry about what you said to anybody, that there might, anybody might, especially during the war, you know, might interpret that and relay it on. And like anything you said outside the plant, too. Like if you went to the butcher shop and announced, said something to the butcher about your son coming home or your daughter coming home from camp, and he says that means he's going to be shipped out. And never to mention anything like that, because it might get back and to the enemy and they'd have information about shipping and things like that. I know we had the alert warnings too. We had to go to those shelters at the side.
Mm-hmm.
If I look back now, I think if they'd have dropped a bomb, we'd have been mashed to pieces, and I don't think they'd have kept a bomb out.
You were talking before we turned on the tape about camouflage.
Oh, yes. The whole plant was camouflaged. You've taken this chicken wire, like little, circles like that, that's interwoven. You've seen it, where they chickens. And that was about on the east side of Lakewood. There were no buildings then, and that was all parking lot. And that was all covered with that, clear across the street and over all the buildings on the west side. And it was painted, it was like chicken feathers were over it, little feathers, and they were painted and sprayed painted to lay out to look like a little town. Because we could see from down below where the streets were, you know. I always wished I was in a plane to see what it looked like from up above. But it was, this whole thing was camouflaged during the war.
How long did that stay on there?
A couple of years. It wasn't at first when we went to work, but they, as things progressed, well, then they camouflaged the plant.
Do you remember what the sign said around it regarding sabotage?
No. I don't recall any like that. I do know that in the restroom there was a sign, "Is this trip necessary? Don't take time off from work."
Were you aware of inside the plant security guards watching over your work?
Oh, watching. Yeah. Yes, inspectors and security guards were around. Yeah, they were. Well, you didn't always know when they were around, but they were posted around. Some of them were in uniform and some of them weren't.
You talked before about the men being not helpful.
Well, when we first went to work, they certainly weren't. They resented us very, very much. But as the war progressed and most of the younger men were taken, it's just the older men left, they were pretty glad to have our help. And as we learned what we were doing, of course, you can't blame them. We didn't know very much when we came in, even though we had that little bit of training. Most of us had never done anything like that before. And some women never did pick it up. But, no, they weren't very helpful at all at first.
I'm wondering if there was a lot of teasing by the men of you women and passes made. And
some of the younger ones that were quite buxom and would wear tight sweaters and tight pants. Yeah, there were remarks made. But they let us old ladies alone.
Another thing I wanted to ask you was where you bought your work clothes. You said you had to wear shoes that had steel toes. And
well, I bought them in a shoe store in Whittier. Certain kind. I usually wore the, that time I think they were black, or not Whittier, but Santa Ana's where I lived then. And they had to come up, they had to have the steel toes in and come way up to here, just regular solid old shoes, you know, that we wore. And later I got them where they had the rubber soles because they're on concrete all the time.
I just wondered if you had to buy them at a special place.
No, uh-uh. They had them in their company store there that you could buy them. But I bought mine at the shoe store there and sat out.
Okay. I'd like to go on now to post-war things. And you said that you took a 7-week trip as soon as you got laid off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'd like to begin there and ask you what happened then when you got home from your 7-week trip.
Well, when we got home, there was a telegram there calling me back to work. And then when I went there, why, they said, well, the job had been filled. It was for riveting. Because I hadn't riveted. I had been doing other things. And said it was a pretty hard job, and it was already filled. So I took their word for it. I would have gone back to work if I'd have been there. But I didn't go back right then.
How long was it before you went back to work?
Well, it was 1951. In the meantime, I worked at a little subsidiary, a shop that made D.D. Johnson blouses. One of the big old sewing machine factory kinds, you know, for practically nothing. And made a little bit of money. But then they started hiring again, I think it was about 1950, making a C-154, I think. And I went down one Monday morning, tried to get back on, and I got the brush off. And I was told me to come back next Monday, and I came back next Monday, same thing. Came back the third Monday, and she started to tell me the same thing, and I just kept on talking to her. Told her what all I'd done during the war, and I didn't give her a chance to tell me I had to come back. Pretty soon she looked at me, and she says, "Well, Mrs. Hoffman, wait, let me go see your files." And she came back and said, "Well, most of them are in Santa Monica. But if you wouldn't mind coming back Thursday, we'll have them by that time, and we'll see." So I was there. And then a briefcase about so thick, and I said, there's a gentleman interviewed me, and I said, "Oh, that about me?" He said, "It sure is." And I said, "Well, I didn't know they were taking all that on me." He says, "Well, nothing bad so far." He was coming through it like that. And he says, "Well, Mrs. Hoffman, all we got is riveting on sling." I said, "I'll take it." I never riveted. But I'd hired in as an upholstery worker during the war, and I never saw the upholstery department. So I figured, well, I'd bluff it through, and I'd learn to rivet. And I did. Just happened when I got there wasn't an awful lot of riveting to do, and I told the lead man that I was pretty rusty on it, just he didn't give me time to get back in the groove, and he said, "Well, there isn't much." I had helped the riveter where you buck the rivets. I'd done that, but I hadn't shot him. And so he brought up another young woman for to work with me, and she said, "Well, I don't know how to rivet. You'll have to teach me." I said, "I don't either, so we'll learn together." And we did.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, I found out that you just kind of have to bluff your way through sometimes, and then if you can produce, okay.
Before we go on and talk about the Douglas years, I'd like to talk about the years in between. And when did you go to work in the sewing factory?
I think it was about just shortly after I got back from that trip. And I worked there a whole couple of years.
And what made you decide to take that job?
For the sewing job?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all it was. And I wanted to make some money. I got spoiled by having my own shack at Douglas. Of course, when I left Douglas, I was making all of $1.25 an hour, which was top wages then for women.
What was it like? Both your girls moved out and went to their own homes,
yeah.
and the house was empty again. And
all three of them. Of course, Arlene left before the war. She was married in 1938. But the other two, and they were home, you know, during the war, and both had children while they were there. Babies, one had a boy and one had a girl. Well, that's kind of lonesome. It was just, I think it was about the first time that we had really, truly been alone, because the first few years of marriage, why, we lived with his folks up in North Dakota on the farm. And then we had children, why, we were to ourselves. So, I don't know, it was kind of lonesome, especially when they first left. We gave them each their bedroom outfits, helped start them off. And then we had empty bedrooms. So in 1949, we sold that house. And we couldn't find a place to rent. There wasn't anything to rent then. And finally, we found a place in Fullerton. And we moved to Fullerton for 6 months. And then we came back to Santa Ana and bought a place. And we had it a while. And we sold it. And my husband had a chance to, he was a salesman, to come to Whittier, take Whittier over. And he came over to sell in Whittier, and so we moved to Whittier then.
What year was that?
That was 1949.
How did your routine change when it just was the two of you?
Well, I did more as I pleased. I didn't have to cook an awful lot like I did before. And we were more free to go. But, see, 1949 was just 2 years later, so I went back to work. It was kind of an easy life from what I had been having.
How many hours did you work when you were working in the garment? 8 hours.
They work 8 in the morning till noon and 1 to 4.
That's 5 days a week?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was up over a store building. Oh, it was about the 800 block west. Second Street was the main street, wasn't it? East and west in Santa Ana?
4th Street.
It was about the 600 or 700 block out. And it was this side of Flower Street. I know. It was up above some store buildings, a whole great big place up there.
You had an extra day during the week
that
you hadn't had during the war.
Yeah. Well, during the war, everybody worked Saturdays. You know, when we didn't have to work Saturdays, why, 5 days a week? What's world coming to, anyhow? Yeah, we had Saturday, but that was taken up by getting your laundry caught up and cleaning the house. And if you wanted to go someplace on Sunday, why, getting ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, during these years after the war, did you have primary responsibility for the household things? You had said before that you and your husband did the shopping on Friday nights, usually
mm-hmm.
during the war. And, I'm wondering if you then assumed most of the chores around the house.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And the shopping, because I didn't drive then. So when I went shopping, he had to take me. Usually that was Saturday afternoon. But, I did everything like that.
Did you begin to get involved in other things outside the home at that point?
Mm-mm. No. I was just more interested in the home and going with my husband places. And
what kinds of places would you go?
Oh, we take Sunday trips, drive up the mountains or over to my daughter's in Riverside, sometimes down at the beach. And just, you know, we followed the softball games from Santa Ana, and that was really something in those days. And they played Huntington Beach and Fulton and Anaheim and San Bernardino and Colton. We always followed them in the summertime.
How long did you work? You said you worked about 2 years in the garment job.
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
At about that time, then we moved to Whittier.
1949.
Okay.
What was your house like in Whittier?
It was just a little plain bungalow, 2 bedrooms and 1 bath, living room, kitchen, eating area off the kitchen. We rented the first 2-3 years we were there, right back there. Well, it was just 1 block from where Henshaw built their store, that mall down there, you know. And then we bought a place over on LaFoy, about a half a mile away. But when I first started to work again, we lived there in that first few hours.
How long were you in Whittier before you started to work at Douglas?
About 2 years. About 1951 when I went back.
What did you do during those 2 years?
Just carry there the house, take care of things. Nothing exceptional.
Did you have expectations then of going back to work?
Yes, I wanted to. But we keep hearing rumors that Douglas was getting a contract and they were hiring again. I wanted to go back to work. It's good money. Most of the women could make. And I like that kind of work. I'd rather do that than sewing. Once I learned it.
Now, if there hadn't been those rumors about Douglas hiring, would you have thought about working somewhere else?
I probably would, if I could have found it. But there wasn't an awful lot in those days that a woman could do if she wasn't trained. Just clerking in a store, and I didn't care for that. And there wasn't anything much else. I'm not the fastest seamstress in the world, and I couldn't make a living at that.
You started to tell me about your process of getting rehired. And you said the man was looking through your file. And
uh-huh.
I'm wondering then, What kind of interview process that you went through?
Well, he just was looking there to see what I had done. During the war, they graded us just like in school. Every 3 months, we got something similar to a report card. And if it was favorable, we got a nickel raise. And I suppose it was all of that. And I suppose anything you did wasn't right was in there, too. I don't know what was in there. But he said there was nothing bad. I couldn't remember doing anything that would be that. But they sure kept a lot of data on you that you wouldn't even think about.
Did you have to talk to anyone else besides him?
Okay. No. He just told me to report the next Monday at 3 or 3:30, whatever time the swing shift started, to go to work. And I think this was on about Thursday, the week before.
Did you have to have a physical all this time?
Not this time, huh? I did when I first went in. But no, they didn't even do that this time. They just hired you. I worked swing almost a year and a half. I liked it myself, but my husband didn't.
What were the swing shift hours, 3 to 11?
3 to, I know we left home at 3. It was, I think, 12 to 4, something like that, and we didn't get out until 12:14, something like that. It was about 1:30 when we get home. A bus was there, but a good part of the time my husband came after me.
What were his feelings? You said he didn't like you working swing shift.
Well, he just liked somebody to be home cook his dinner. He's not a cook. And he didn't like his lonely evenings. That was the main thing. He didn't object to me working, but he just didn't like it all alone. So finally, he talked so much about it, and he used to come down and our supervisor, and I guess I laid too. It was a little place on Lakewood. Oh, it was about South Street, I think, where they sold, it was a little restaurant, and they had hot pie a la mode. It came in individual pies. It was hot, and they just piled it up with ice cream. 35 cents those days. And we stopped there and get one of those, and my husband got acquainted with all those people, and he finally told my supervisor that I was going to have to quit if I didn't get on day. And he says, oh, he says, we can't have that, because we depend on her. And my lead had told me I couldn't get on. And when he talked to my supervisor, he said, well, he says, if she doesn't get on day, she's going to have to quit. And I think the next time I got my paycheck, I was transferred to day. But I kind of liked it because I could get a lot done around the house. You know, I didn't have to go to work at 3 o'clock. But it kept peace and family. I didn't blame him.
When you went back, were there very many other women who had worked during the war?
Quite a few.
Working?
And some of them I knew. They were scattered through the building. But there weren't near as many as there were during the war. But there were quite a few working.
What about minority women during those years?
They were working.
Okay.
I worked with some very, very nice Mexican women and black women, too. A lot nicer than some of the white ones. No, we got along fine with them.
Were there, you know, what in general, was the attitude favorable towards them?
Well, as working conditions, yes, but at that time you'd say, well, that's fine to work with them, but I wouldn't care to go out socially. That was the attitude. But, of course, I never did because I wasn't around them that time. But, no, they were really nice.
You said you started riveting. Your first job. What was that like, learning that process?
Well, it wasn't so bad once you got started with the two of us, and it wasn't great. It wasn't inside the plane. It was, we were on the floor, sort of bench work, and what we were riveting was clamped to what they call standards that stood up, you know, to hold a big, it was like corrugated steel, and maybe about 10 feet long, and 5 or 6 feet high, and I thought you could reach over, you know. Mm-hmm. And we just learned to do that, and it wasn't too bad. Didn't take too much brainstorming.
Did you feel confident that you would be able to learn it?
Oh, sure. I just never had the opportunity. And you go in, and if you expected them to put you to work riveting, bang, 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 you didn't know how, it'd make you nervous, but it didn't happen that way. I had an extra nice lead man, and I told him I was rusty on it, you know, which he believed. And there wasn't an awful lot of it, just some, you know. There's so many other things that went along with it to do that it wasn't hard at all.
How was the plant set up? Was it similar to the way it was during the war?
Quite a bit, yes. When I went back, there were tracks of the plane, you know, as it moved from position to position. And we worked on the benches right below the plane. And then sometimes up in the plane, but usually it was on the floor. During the war, I worked up in the plane and around. But it wasn't that way this time. They didn't have those high standards, you know, that three-story jigs that we had to go up and down. There was no more of that. But they just gave you one job to learn, and you did that, and that was your job. And that was for that. And then when it came time to move the plane, that was all put in, you know, and then you started another one. And you just learned your job, and that was it.
How long did you work in that one? In that one department?
Mm-hmm. I expect about 3 years. We had that strike, you know, in the early 50s, and we were out 7 or 8 weeks, I think, something like that. And I was there then. But when they were talking strike, none of us ever thought they'd strike. We thought at the last minute, I was on swing then. By midnight, why, it'd be called off, you know, but it wasn't. But they, about 10 o'clock, why, the lead men started just packing our tools away and putting our toolboxes and telling us not to come back till we were called and getting things put away, getting ready for us. And usually when you went out at night, all that bunch going down that tunnel under the street, you get in there, it sounded like a bunch of geese, you know, just everybody talking, and it echoed. That night, you could hear a pin drop. People going, there wasn't a word said. It was the quietest bunch you ever saw. And they had pickets all around. I didn't do any picketing or anything. But my lead told me, says, you stay away from here just as far as you can. And some of them, you know, came back. I belonged to the union then too, but I stayed away.